And thank you. What I wanted to talk to you about this morning is to give you an update on where we are on our ongoing transformation of Digital Equipment Corporation. And of course, it gives me a lot of pleasure to be here this particular morning, since yesterday we announced that we had returned to profitability, somewhat sooner, in fact, quite a bit sooner than the analysts had been anticipating, and in fact, sooner than I thought was possible when I took on this responsibility last October the 1st. So I've been using a slide from time to time that describes how digital's gotten this problem. It took several years. You can see from the slide that although the revenue was kind of stable, not growing very much, we actually began losing in terms of earnings per share, if you can see it back here, as far back as 1988. And we've been on a rather steady and unfortunate slide. I'm happy to say that I was promoted right here. And through the efforts of everybody in Digital Equipment Corporation and a lot of hard work, we have been able to effectuate the beginnings of a turnaround, a rather sharp turnaround. I had looked at, by the way, data of similar companies in the last decade or so, and to see what would you expect in terms of these turnarounds. Traditionally, it takes 3 to 5 years to change a culture and an environment, and it's going to take us about 3 to 5 years. In terms of the financial turnaround, this will prove to be one of the most dramatic in at least recent American history by any company of remotely the similar size, and that's of any of them. So I'm very pleased to report that to our employees worldwide, that everybody is really contributing and we're getting there. Now this, for those of you that don't recall, this is the first profit in 8 quarters, but also it's the first time that if you look at year over year, quarter over quarter, we had about 16 quarters, I think 16 out of 17, where we had deteriorating results. So we've now had 3 where each quarter, compared to the quarter of the previous year, things have gotten better. So in addition to the earnings per share growth and that, we've also increased our cash on hand by working very diligently, and I want to congratulate everybody that's been working on this problem, of collecting from our customers sooner. So our days of sales outstanding had been among the worst in the industry. That is to say, we're running about last year 83 days of sales outstanding, need to collect. We've reduced that to a level not seen for more than 15 years at Digital through the hard work of a lot of employees out there worldwide, this year down to 69 days. That brought in, as I say, $500 million in additional cash to manage the business. Now, since we need that cash for all the different things we're doing, we would have had to borrow that money and pay interest on it had we not worked diligently to collect. So in every aspect of the business, we're doing a great deal to improve our profitability. One of the major activities in the company that I want to ask everybody's continued support, if we want to see that chart continuing to do that well, has to do with our value chain. So we're going to talk a little bit about how we're making progress on getting competitive, because we are. The value chain re-engineering effort that's going on, many of you may be aware of, is a worldwide effort, extends all the way out to the customer from the point at which we quote business to customers to we collect from customers that are satisfied with our products and services. That whole thing is called a value chain. And we've been for the last, I think, 15 or 18 months, examining different pieces of that value chain and re-engineering it in order to improve our cycle time in delivering products and services and reduce our costs, be more efficient, more responsive to customers. If you think about what work has occurred as a result of that value chain and other activity in Digital, in the last year we've taken out more than $1 billion in spending, unnecessary spending, more than $1 billion. So we are getting competitive. If you looked at what's going on in the computer industry, it is going to continue quite relentlessly. That is, pressure on our prices will continue. And so you'll see that there'll be pressure on this line, which is called the gross margin line. There'll be pressure on that because of not only price pressure, but also because of the shift in your products from the high end of the products to more and more of our product line will be in the lower end of the hardware products, and that has to do with, of course, personal computers, storage devices, and workstations, which are growing rapidly in terms of units, but prices will relentlessly continue to come down. So we have to continue to work all of these issues to be competitive. Now, you see a chart on here also that compares from the start of FY92, and that's the start of FY93, You can see our sales, general, and administrative costs, SG&A, it's got the right trend line. It's going down. And in fact, it had not been going down previously. But it's going down, and it's going down rather dramatically. Still not quite competitive, but if you looked at Q4 of this year versus Q4 of last year, we've reduced that SG&A from 33% of revenue to 28%. Now, we need to be in the low to mid-20s to be really competitive, and by that I mean to have really competitive earnings per share. So we've got some more work to do, but the trend is obviously in the right direction. We're getting a lot of work done on it. In terms of research and engineering, we've also been working quite hard there to consolidate our engineering activity under the direction and leadership provided by Bill Strecker. A lot has been accomplished. I'll talk about that more this morning in the speech and also probably in questions and answers. But in any event, engineering spending had been reduced by 24% quarter over quarter. And yet we're going to have more products, more services, more solutions for our customers than ever before. This has mostly to do with re-engineering engineering to be more efficient, more productive, eliminate redundant, overlapping projects. You know, a year ago, as I recall, we had six different groups designing CPUs, four different groups working on network engineering. It's all been consolidated, redundancies eliminated, costs reduced by 24%. SG&A costs reduced quarter over quarter by 17%. Very dramatic reductions. We've reduced discretionary spending as well. Now, in the course of all of that, we've also been trying to transform our company in terms of becoming much more customer-focused. And all of the vendors, all our competitors, talk about being customer-focused, but digital has actually organized ourselves to reflect that customer focus. So we have recognized that customers are buying not only hardware products and software to enable those products to operate, but they're also looking for solutions to problems, to business problems, just like we are, re-engineering our business. And we've organized ourselves so that we today are the only worldwide open, we accept all of the standards, we're a leadership and open, so the only worldwide open integrated information technology supplier that's organized by customer business. What that means is, of course, if you're in one of the industries that we've chosen to focus on, and we're not doing everything, that on a global basis, you have a business unit, you have someone looking after your interest in solutions, hardware, software, consulting in that particular industry. So if you're in banking, for example, digital is the only vendor worldwide that's organized to focus on banking worldwide. And if you're in banking as a customer, you're not really that interested in the other activities that digital is involved in. You're interested in what are we doing about banking. And most of these banks are global. They're interested in a company that can deal with them on a global basis. So this is quite unique. No other company is organized. No other company in our industry is organized this way. So we've organized by customer business in order to serve our customers better. Now, I was visited about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, by one of our chief information officers of a major customer, told me that they, in fact, had been visiting with the chief executive officers of both IBM and Hewlett-Packard and encouraging them to adopt something like our particular organizational structure to better serve their needs. At the worldwide sales and marketing meeting that we had, I'm going to talk about in a second, when I was giving my speech that I was asked to give, I referred to that. That very day, it was very polite of Lou Gerstner at IBM to announce in USA Today that they were, in fact, changing their sales force to somehow reflect a focus on industries in addition to products and services and software. So that was helpful. So people are going to emulate this model, it appears. Now, another accomplishment in the last 9-10 months, one of the things I committed to do on October the 1st was deliver to our board of directors, for the first time, so far as I know in the company's history, an integrated business plan. A business plan that tied out completely between product groups, business units, engineering, all of the different functions that support the company worldwide, and our worldwide sales force in all of the territories in which we do business. First time. I know it's hard to believe. Was it 1992, I think. In 92, there were people in the worldwide sales force that didn't have their goal sheets by Christmas. Halfway through the year, not quite sure what you were supposed to accomplish. I'm quite pleased to announce that everyone in the company worked very hard to make that commitment a reality. As you've probably read and seen in our various publications, we delivered an integrated business plan by business unit and by territory, where the agreements are the same on both sides of the handshake, the goals are well known, and people are accountable. They know what their responsibility is, they know what they're accountable to deliver, and everybody is going to work together to make that a reality. If everybody's successful, obviously digital equipment will be successful. But everybody is accountable, of course, including the chief executive officer. In fact, the chief executive officer is the most accountable. A novel idea. Senior management is the most accountable. We all have to work together in order to achieve winning in the marketplace. In addition to that, as I mentioned about engineering, a lot of our product strategy has been clarified for the first time in a very long time. We previously had, this may be hard to believe, a commitment to not having a strategy. There was some fear that if we chose a strategy, perhaps it might not be the right strategy. So therefore, Digital elected to choose all strategies simultaneously. This is the same thing as not having a strategy, and it's completely unsupportable in today's open computing environment. There's not enough money to support all strategies. So you have to figure out, where do you have, based on your resources and capabilities, an opportunity to be leadership in something? And we've been studying that and debating that, and we've been quite clear about what that is. And Digital is going to be the leader in open client server systems. These systems that deliver customer solutions, every word in there is important. Leadership, that means the best. Doesn't necessarily mean the largest, although in some markets that we choose to compete in, we will be the largest. But it means to be the best. The one that comes to the mind in the customer when you say, well, who's the best in delivery? Well, there's Digital. Of course, they're number one. Hard to say number two or number three. That's the objective. That's what we're trying to achieve. Leadership. It's open. You can't have it both ways. You've got to decide to be out front, totally agnostic relative to these operating systems, choices that customers feel passionately about. We're agnostic. We will supply OpenVMS, worldwide leadership in Unix, and leadership in Windows NT when it begins shipping, which actually started yesterday from Microsoft. So fundamentally, leadership in open systems and client-server computing, a form of distributed computing in which Digital has more technological understanding and foundation than any of our competitors. And this is an arena that the whole industry is moving to, particularly in the downsizing from mainframes to client-server computing. You see this all the time. We are better positioned than anyone else to take leadership there, and no one owns leadership there at this time because it is an emerging marketplace for us. So we have an opportunity, we have the technical resources to be successful, and we have a clear strategy. Now, I mentioned that on this strategy, we had communicated this to our worldwide sales force at a sales meeting a few weeks ago held in Boston. The first worldwide sales and marketing, had sales and marketing executives from worldwide get together and listen to the senior leadership team, listen to the strategy from engineering and the rest of the company, understand what it is they're supposed to do. Everybody has a goal sheet, knows what he or she is supposed to accomplish in sales, first time ever. People were very motivated. We are more dependent on our sales and marketing professionals than on any other group in the company to grow this business. We have everything else we need. We've got to grow the business. We've been doing a lot about getting competitive. Some of it's painful, unavoidable. Now we need to grow the business. So we have a clear sales direction, and we have the applications that customers need, and I think we're going to show you a clip on that.
Thousands of familiar DOS and Windows 16 applications, such as Microsoft Excel, will run on digital Intel and Alpha-based PC under Windows NT. In the area of software development and migration tools, tools such as Hamilton C Shell will allow Unix users to easily move to Windows NT. Graphic designers can use a powerful image processing application like CPI ImageIn that will allow them to scan, edit, and process images of all kinds. With the power of the DEC PC AXP 150, they will see what interactive image editing really is. Here is an example of a mechanical CAD application, PTC Pro Engineer, that could run only on powerful unit workstation before. Now, on the DEC PC-AXP 150, it runs faster than on most workstations. Next, we see a printer circuit board design and routing application, MaxEDS for MaxTech. This application will use as much CPU power as you can give it. It is exactly the kind of application that can take advantage of the power of the Alpha-AXP chip. And finally, another application that benefits from the CPU power of the AXP, PVWave from Visual Numeric. PVWave is an application for visualizing data in scientific applications, such as the computer modeling of storms. These are just a small sample of the hundreds of applications that are now being ported to the Alpha environment running Windows NT.
Of course, Enrico Pescatore, who's vice president of our worldwide PC operations, was talking about Windows NT on the Alpha PCs. But in addition to that, as I mentioned, we're also shipping OpenVMS and Unix, Unified Unix, the world's only 64-bit Unix. Applications are being ported to Unix and to OpenVMS as we're standing here, right? So today, we're well ahead of what we had hoped to have. We have more than 2,600 applications, about half of those now on Unix, which is a position the company has never been in before. And as more of these applications get out there in the marketplace running on Alpha, more and more comparisons will be between Alpha and our applications, applications from third-party vendors running on competitive systems. And the advantages of Alpha AXP technology will be quite clear. There'll be more positive messages out there about our products and services, and that's going to help Digital grow the business. Now, we're also, as you know, on a new campaign around our branding and advertising. It's being very well received in the marketplace, and that will continue. Digital's been having some problems, but so have all competitors. And we've worked more rapidly, more swiftly to address those problems than many competitors. But every competitor in this industry is affected by the same dramatic change that's affecting Digital, and each one has its own challenges. In the case of IBM, obviously, they've driven for decades with a mainframe mentality. It's very difficult for them to figure out how to compete in an open systems environment where the world is not dominated by mainframes, and to manage between all of their different divisions some rational strategy, and at this moment, of course, they don't have one. On the other hand, they will fix this problem, in my belief, at some point. So we can't take IBM lightly by any means, by far the largest information technology supplier and a good competitor. In the case of Sun Microsystems, virtually everybody knows that the Spark architecture has run out of performance. So compared to our workstations, for example, Sun has a significant disadvantage, depending on the application or whatever, by factors of two or more. This makes it very difficult to be competitive when your previous claim to fame was the highest price performance. Digital's completely stolen that from all the other competitors. In workstations, we have the highest performance workstation in every price band, in every territory in which we do business, and we have the highest performance workstation at any price. In the case of Hewlett-Packard, they're our strongest competition today in terms of technology, in terms of hardware and software technology, our strongest competitor, but even Hewlett-Packard, running real applications on their workstations versus Digital, has a significant disadvantage in terms of performance. On the order of 25 to 30% is what I've seen so far, depending on the application. That's a large disadvantage. Even so, we have to win mostly by outperforming Hewlett-Packard in terms of service, responsiveness, focus on our customers, doing things correctly with excellence better than they do. But every competitor has some kind of a challenge, and all of the traditional computer companies are struggling with the same environment we are. Now, with respect to the systems integration piece of our business, this is a very important piece of Digital's business, part of our services organization to deliver solutions, a key part of client-server computing. You notice that statement said, to deliver solutions. Customers really are more interested in getting a solution to their business problem than what particular hardware it's going to run on. And so the idea is help the customer solve their problems with our systems integration and systems engineering capabilities, our competitors in that space, you know, the McKinsey's, Anderson Consulting, EDS, and various others, do not have the technology foundation that digital has. You know, a proof point around that has to do with our systems engineering customer center that we just dedicated yesterday, as a matter of fact. Approximately 400 engineers, huge facility with lots of equipment, working real demonstration and developing real solutions side by side with customers from a multiplicity of organizations within digital, but primarily our systems engineering group led by Mahendra Patel. These other consultants can't field that kind of technology, don't have that kind of systems engineering customer center, where our customers can come and actually run their applications on a digital configuration and solve real problems, working side by side with engineers. Not hype, this is hard work in the trenches, real professional engineering that digital can provide and demonstrate that our solutions are going to solve those problems. By the way, our intention is, during the fiscal year, to create a similar systems engineering customer center in Europe. So in any event, we have everything that we need to be successful. We've turned the business around from significant losses. We're headed in the right direction. We're getting competitive. What we need here is a winning spirit, you know, a belief in all digital employees worldwide. We can win. There is absolutely no excuse for this management or anybody in management to doubt that digital can win. Practice and preparation count. We've been doing that. We have everything we need to be successful. We have leadership technology, financial strength, customers that want us to succeed. We have leadership and talent at the top of this organization, and we're working on our costs to make sure that we get competitive. What we're lacking sometimes in some places, although I see that dissipating, is the confidence and the will to win. If you're going to win at doing something, you have to do three or four things. You have to know what it is you're trying to accomplish. You have to want to do it. You've got to want to do it. And you've got to believe you can do it, because whether you believe it or you don't, you'll be right, as Henry Ford has said. And you have to then act. That's all. And every one of these things is totally within our ability to control.
Of life was sure and steady. For there once was a time when all the facts of life seemed clear, when relationships held firm, and every action had predictable results. But that frozen world of the past has given way to new rules. New ways of being. New surges of activity. New demands. Environment of sink or swim. Imagine a world where change never seems to stop, and you will imagine the future we are headed for today. Competitive environment we have ever known, the urgency for customer focus in everything we do has never been greater. Strength amidst pressure. Stability in the face of change. Today's digital. Moving forward now, putting imagination to work.
I like the video a lot. It does sort of remind you of, certainly the going over the falls reminded me of October the 1st and our FY92 financial results. I think we're somewhere bobbing in that rapids right now. We've kind of at least come up and got some air. And we do have quite a challenge ahead of us, but it's quite exhilarating either. So I think that video captures a lot for you, hopefully. Now, what we're going to do to win here is that every person in our organization certainly has to make his or her own contribution. And hopefully, you know what your role is in the organization. If not, we need to find out from your management, you know, what is it that you are supposed to do. But in a general sense, every person in the organization has to focus on satisfying our customers. Virtually every time I've talked with you on these DVNs or in speeches around the world, I've talked about focusing on customers. So each employee has an opportunity to do his or her role so that we can become excellent and the best in solving real customer needs. We need to support our account teams. We have account teams, those are the most important element in the company. That's what our customer relates to, is the account team that services their business. That's the digital face to that customer. All of the rest of us, including the chief executive officer, are employed to support that account team. It's not the other way around. It's that we all work to make them successful. We have to ask each of ourselves, you may be surprised at this, but I'm a runner, you may know that. At least once a week when I'm out running, comes into my mind, you know, a kind of stream of consciousness, and I ask myself, did you do anything really this week that added value to this company? I mean, anything at all that might remotely justify the earnings that you're getting from the shareholders of this company, anything at all. And unfortunately, there's some weeks I have to admit that I can't, in my own honesty with myself, say I really earned it. You know, I didn't do enough. I'm quite critical on myself. I suggest that's necessary in the competitive environment that we're engaged in. We have to be critical of our performance and ourselves and ask ourselves, each of us, have we done anything really to contribute to this enterprise? And fortunately, there are a lot of days when you can say yes. And boy, that feels a lot better. When you can say, yes, I really did something important this week or this month or in the last 24 hours that's going to make a difference to the success of this enterprise and grow the customer value, make sure that our employees are well positioned for the future. That's what you're trying to do. This all involves teamwork. It's too big an issue today. It's impossible for any one person to do everything or even to know everything. We have to work together. So the most important aspect, and even more important because of this new organization, is to work together with teamwork, keeping a mind on what problem are we trying to solve here. The problem we're trying to solve is to be the most responsive to our customers and to have excellence in everything that we do. So that's our objective. We have a strategy. We have a cost structure that's becoming much more competitive, not finished yet. We have technology that is leadership in the industry. We know where we're going here. We have a professional sales and marketing worldwide force that knows what's expected, that's accountable, that has the opportunity for the first time to earn significant incentives for overachievement of their goals. We're poised here to continue this turnaround that we have started. And I think working together, it's quite clear, I'm quite optimistic that we will do so. There may be, from time to time, little setbacks, whatever. You can be quite sure we're going to remain tenacious and focused on our objective, and we are working together as a team going to turn this company around. Thank you. Now, I would like to answer any questions that might be on your mind whatsoever. And as Alan said before I came out here, we'd really encourage you to ask whatever you're thinking. You know, you're not going to embarrass me. It's a pleasure for me to have the opportunity to talk to you about what we're doing, where we're going, opinions on anything. So I would very much welcome that first brave soul who wants to ask a question.
Despite the return to profitability and the increase in revenues, the stock market didn't reflect anything positive, and I was wondering what you thought it would take to get the stock market to regain its confidence in digital.
Oh, that's a very good question. It has to do, you might think I would be disappointed by that yesterday, and I was somewhat disappointed even though I predicted it. We were discussing this, getting ready for our news events with the analysts and that, And the reason I predicted it wasn't going to do much, I predicted it'd go plus or minus a point either way, was fundamentally because it was expected. So the shareholders and the people that invest in our company, many of which are large funds, they expected roughly the results that we were able to demonstrate. And also because I was quite clear that we are at significant risk in Q1 of not being able to stay in the black. Now, our objective is to stay in the black. Once having gotten to the black, we want to stay there. But on the other hand, we know that half our business is in Europe, and Europe is having a lot of trouble, and it's on the economies in all of the countries there, difficulties. It's going to be tough. So a lot of emphasis has to be placed on our European sales and marketing professionals to get more business, even though this is the slow season for Europe. They take extended vacations, business is soft, but our expenses continue. Now, the other geographies aren't off the hook either. I mean, everybody's trying to make his or her goal for the year. These are aggressive goals, and so people are going to be out there beating the bushes, but there's a risk. And so my style in terms of talking to the street is to make sure that we don't have a lot of hype here. We talk about reality. The reality is Q1 could go either way. It's impossible to forecast. We're very near our break-even point. It's going to depend on everybody contributing to lowering the costs and increasing the revenues to the best of their ability. And that's why the stock did not take off. But I did think it was kind of amusing that in the case of one of our competitors, the IBM company, they showed an $8.9 billion loss and the stock went up. So Charlie Halloran, our vice president of media, remarked at a recognition event last evening that I was at for employees that had done an outstanding job for the company, had a little recognition event. Charlie said that if he were writing the news releases today, he would have written, "Digital does $9 billion better than IBM." So that would have been accurate, but in any event. The other part of your question is, what is it going to take to get the stock price up? It's very clear, a couple of consistent quarters. We need to have stay in the black in Q1, consistent quarters of profitable growth, so that the analysts then begin to see, hey, this is not just a flash in the pan because we seasonably have a very strong Q4 in sales. This is a sustainable transformation. And my own belief is that if we are successful in our objective of staying in the black, even a dime, a quarter, in Q1, then along about October, November, when those results are out, of course I'd like more, but whatever, just in the black, then you're going to see the stock go up rather dramatically, assuming that the whole market doesn't collapse. So that's what it takes. Consistency of earnings, belief that you can grow the business. If you've been reading these articles, they're quite convinced that we can get our costs in line, because we've demonstrated that. Now they need to be convinced we can grow the business in a very competitive environment. I'm convinced to convince them, we have to demonstrate it. Yes.
Hi, Andy Feit with Unix Systems Marketing. We've definitely seen some improved accountability in the field and improved accountability in corporate as well. But I think there's some conflicts in some of the goals that you outlined. When going to a customer-focused organization, one of the trade-offs, I think, has been in efficiency. And you talked about improving efficiency. As an example, today, to get things done, we used to work with just three geographies. Now we still work with the three geographies, but we have to work with anywhere from 3 to 5 to 9 different CBUs. Depending on what you're trying to do, an announcement or a marketing campaign, that the meetings have gotten larger and therefore longer as you try to gain consensus of everybody. It's hard to feel who's really in charge in the distributed organization. What kinds of things will you be doing to improve the efficiency of the organization?
I think that's a very good question and a good observation. I believe it's accurate either as to where we are today. And it's not surprising to me as we make the transition from one organizational structure that had been in place for more than a decade to a different one. And the issue was, and the objective was, not to layer on all of the CBU overhead on top of the overhead that previously existed in the field organizations. Notwithstanding that objective, in many cases, as you point out, we've nonetheless succeeded in doing that. The business units, in order to make their profitability goals for this year, have no alternative but to examine that structure and to make appropriate actions to make it more efficient. On the other hand, if you are, depending on where you are in the field, if you are responsible for a specific account or collection of accounts within a specific industry, you should not be really worried that much about 9 different business units. You have one business unit. Every account has been mapped to one business unit that's responsible. And that business unit is where you should be going in the territory with the customer business unit or the product business unit in that territory supporting you. It's their job function. to get you the resources you need to be successful. So this is going to take some time to clarify, but we absolutely have to get the lines of responsibility clearer, even though at the top they're well understood. The issue there has to be with people's natural reluctance to change. Also, for the last at least 10 or 12 years, we had demonstrated by constantly changing our organization and our strategies and a lot of indecisiveness at headquarters here, that if you didn't agree with something, all you had to do is wait and it'd go away. You know, you could do something else. So structures that have been in place for some length of time, trying to stay in place, didn't want to embrace this change. That's a failing strategy. You know, we have to embrace change. We're quite clear. If I'm anything, I'm consistent. You know, every message has been consistent. We are staying with this model, and the business units will work to get the efficiencies that you've identified that we need to have, and they work with the territories. It's about teamwork. As a company, we have a propensity to try and find opportunities for conflict. We're trying to expunge that behavior in our company. You know, we have plenty of conflict out there with our competitors. Let's try to keep it to that. Inside, we need to work as a team. But there's no question that this year is the transformation year for digital. A lot of things will be decided and hammered out within each territory about the roles of business units and territory management. But in the total, at the top, the rules are well defined. Now the issue is getting that as a behavior through the organization and eliminating the confusion that exists out there and eliminating the number of meetings, by the way. You know, as you just did, as an account person out there in the field, and it's worldwide, I know I'm talking to a lot of employees here, they should be looking back at digital equipment headquarters here. And everything you see between you and digital equipment headquarters that's in the way of you serving your customers needs to be identified so we can deal with it, because it's not necessary. That's not the issue. You know, we have a lot more streamlining to do in order to stay competitive and to be responsive. Yes.
Bob, hello, Wayne Pomianski from Personnel here at the Mill. You certainly have delivered a message that's very, very optimistic and positive about the future. Working in Personnel, of course, I interact with lots and lots of employees every day. I believe that employees will be listening to that message in the context of the change and specifically the downsizing that they're observing within their own organizations and other organizations in the company. Can you comment about what you envision as future trends or activities globally in terms of downsizing in the company?
Yes, I'd be glad to. I think it is unfortunate that we have to continue this restructuring and re-engineering of our company, but on the other hand, it's quite clearly necessary in order to remain profitable so that we can add back benefits and we can grow the business and do the things we need to do. So my belief is that throughout 1994, and fundamentally my belief is for forever, there will be continued emphasis on doing things differently, which from time to time will result in people that don't have an opportunity to contribute fully to the enterprise, can't find a place for them. That will be the nature of things. On the other hand, for the whole industry, frankly. On the other hand, I don't believe that if we can grow the business here, I don't believe we're going to need any more of these large-scale thousands and thousands of downsizing activities. I hope not. I hope not. That's not, well, I'm very clear here. I'm not saying that there won't be some employees that need to leave the company, either for performance reasons or because, again, there's not sufficient work or the work isn't needed or we figured out how to do the work more efficiently. Over time, there'll be some of those, hopefully in modest numbers. Hopefully. I don't think we'll have to have large layoffs, but we'll also be hiring people. There's skills that we need in our company that we don't have. And I'm quite intent also on hiring people from the universities and colleges that will sustain the growth of the enterprise as we go forward, more aggressively than we have in recent years. So there'll be puts and takes, and it'll be different by territory and by business unit. But what I just said about business units and what was observed here about the multiplicity of operations necessarily implies that as we look through that, re-engineer that, there will still be some people that will have to find employment outside our company. Unavoidable, painful, has to be done. Has to be done. We've got to get competitive and stay competitive, so it's an ongoing process. But again, if we have revenue growth, we should be able to avoid these large-scale, massive downsizings. I'd certainly like to have that behind us. And in our field organizations, Ed Lucente has said his assessment of the worldwide sales organization is we have a stable worldwide sales organization. And except for performance issues, he doesn't see any need for additional downsizing in the field. And I think that's very good news for our sales professionals. They can focus on making their goals, growing the business, servicing the customers. It's hard to be positive in sales if you're worried about being let go. So I think, and for that matter, in any function. So I think that that's a real positive to get that behind us. We pulled that into Q4, as you know, got it behind us. Now we can focus on growing the business. Other questions?
Hi, I wonder if you could give some insight as to where we are in the transition process to Alpha, when that's going to have a large impact on our financial turnaround. I recall that the transition to a risk platform was quite important to HP's current success. I'd like to know if you could help set our expectations as to where we are in that type of process.
Yes, I'm glad you asked that, because that's a question that a lot of people ask, analysts ask, but people wonder and they say, well, Alpha's not taking off yet. So I was thinking, gee, maybe they're right. That's a concern. I ought to go look at that. So I asked some people to go off and get data from DataQuest and IDC and other companies about how long does it take when you make a transition from one technology generation to another for the new one to sell as many units as the previous one, just as an example. So to be clear, what I said was go out and look at, for example, when Intel went from an 8-bit architecture to 16 bits, or when you went from 16 bits to 32 bits. You know, how long did it take before the new chip sold more than the previous chip? And then, as you pointed out with HP, I also said, hey, go look at HP. See, how long did it take before the new PA RISC architecture sold as many units and as many dollars as the previous generation of their proprietary CISC architecture? And I asked, how long did it take for digital equipment, for example, in going from our 16-bit PDP series, very successful, to the VAX 32-bit series, incredibly successful? How long did it take before we outsold PDPs in terms of VAX units? And a really remarkable thing that came back, which I didn't know, so I asked, you know, and apparently none of the analysts know because they seem to be stuck on this not happening fast enough, is that in every case, this takes about 3 to 4 years. That's amazing. I mean, it's interesting to me that it would be so consistent, 3 to 4 years, at least according to DataQuest, IDC, and other objective observers of the industry. Then you think about, well, it's not that remarkable after all, because what drives that is how long does it take to get enough applications on the new architecture to take advantage of the expanded address space to drive enough volume, because generally the new architecture costs more, delivers more, but if your application can't take advantage of the additional address space or performance, you don't buy that one, you buy the less expensive one. This will be true, by the way, with Pentium and the 486s, if not even slower. Because again, the 486 architecture is a low-cost solution to a lot of problems, and it's moving in big volumes, and Pentium will be relatively slow and has been slow so far. So again, it's what is your expectation? Now, given that data, you ought to be able to go back and look at, okay, if that's the expectation, where are we with Alpha today, having just introduced the systems last November the 10th? And it happens that we're doing very well. Next year, we probably would see, as far as our revenue contribution is concerned, maybe 20% of the revenue or something coming from Alpha, just as a ballparky number. This last year, it was an insignificant percentage of the total, maybe something in the 7 to 10% range of product revenue. And as you know, product revenue is roughly half of digital's revenue. So a small percentage, just started selling because applications were just becoming available. But it's going to take off, and it's doing very well. By the way, the introduction of Alpha and a clear migration path for those customers that have been with digital for a long time, currently on VAXs, helped to stem the decline in the VAX sales as well. And of course, we're introducing additional performance and features on our VAX line. Yes.
Hello, I'm Barry Nestor from the DEC Direct organization here in the U.S. I'm wondering what you think the future holds in store for the direct ordering channels as a whole.
I think that the direct ordering channels will continue to be quite successful, and it looks like they will be growing in terms of their importance not only to digital but to our competitors. It's been a real success story for digital, and one we have to expand on, because as we talked about delivering our products and services to customers at lower cost, indirect channels, that is where you don't have a direct sales force going in and calling on the customer, which is very expensive, are the least expensive way to deliver products, in particular like PCs and storage workstations on the pre-configured workstations, to customers at very low cost. And so I see this as a growing importance, and it's been well executed at Digital, and we can improve it, and we'll continue to do so. Yes.
John Cross in engineering here in the mill. I guess my question has to do with the process that we use to encourage this revenue growth. I was reading a recent issue of Byte magazine, PC magazine, and I noticed that there are ads by IBM, there are ads by HP, there are ads by Dell, no ads by Digital. The only mention of Digital actually is about how the Alpha chips have trouble competing with the new Power PC. Does it make sense that Digital should be trying to increase its presence in advertising in this more general market? It's always been pretty big in professional market or in Business Week, or I saw an ad in Spectrum, but I don't see that we're getting the word out to the general public that would be supporting some of the direct marketing channels that we've talked about here.
I think that your observation has merit. It's really up to the PC division, in the case of PCs, for Enrico Pessatori to decide how he wants to promote the products and services that the PC division offers. But in general, the answer to your question is yes, it makes sense to advertise in those magazines that customers are likely to read for those kinds of products and services. Now, a lot of our advertising has been in the kinds of publications you're mentioning because we were aiming at corporate clients for those products, and corporate clients read those magazines. The issue is, though, implicit in your question was another thing I want to wax on for a minute here, which has to do with that Power PC and Alpha. We have not been aggressive enough, in my view, in our semiconductor pricing and marketing to show what it is that we really have and be more, a little more aggressive, period. You know, we got more aggressive in our workstations and starting to talk about our Unix and leadership, and those ads feel good. You see, here's real data. We haven't done squat around the integrated circuit piece and explaining what we have. I've asked for the Vice President of Semiconductor Operations, Ed Caldwell, to make a presentation of the senior leadership team within the next couple of weeks about a new, much more aggressive pricing strategy around Alpha chips and much more aggressive overall program. We're also going to be announcing the addition to our company of a leader to drive all of the Alpha program to get higher visibility. Talking about PowerPC for a minute, it's not a bad product. It's roughly equivalent in performance to Pentium. Near as I can tell, doesn't have an operating system at this moment, certainly doesn't run Windows or Windows NT. Is mostly talking about what they're going to have in the future. Is not currently being manufactured by Motorola, hadn't figured out how to make it yet. Has four levels of metal and a half micron lithography, which is difficult. Is being manufactured in small quantities by IBM. It will eventually come on. Now, suppose you're a box designer. My view is I'm designing boxes. First thing you're going to design for is Intel. You'd have to be foolish not to design for the Intel architecture, given the fact that they just shipped 30 million copies of Windows. I mean, that's where the volume is. You're going to design your boxes around Intel, just like Digital does around its PCs. If you're going to choose another architecture, one of the RISC architectures, what are you going to choose? Anything other than Intel, say for the top 10% of your product line, you're going to choose the one that has the maximum performance. Because otherwise, there's no point in choosing. And it's unlikely that you'll choose one that doesn't have an operating system or applications. This will not be a good product strategy. So fundamentally, from my point of view, if we price Alpha competitive with PowerPC, with two or three times the performance, I think we're going to win some systems orders there. So we need to be aggressive. I'm not telling Ed the answer, but it's got to be in that general direction. You know, it's his job to run semis. I don't run semis. But it's his job to run semis. But I want to be aggressive there, try to get some market share, get us a little higher on the radar screens. Everybody concedes we have the highest performance. But they're saying, gee, prices are a little high. Don't know. Here comes Motorola and IBM. So we need to thwart that. In any event, it's my intention that we will. Yes.
I'm Keith Bellamy. I work in engineering in Air Scotland. And over the past 3.5 years, I've worked with a lot of engineering groups in Europe. And in this time of consolidation and rationalization, many of those, including the group that developed the Alpha PC, AXP150, are quickly disappearing. I'm wondering if there's a corporate strategy to distribute some product design and engineering to key markets such as Europe.
Yes, there is. The issue there, of course, that's Bill Strecker's responsibility as the chief technology officer and the vice president of engineering. But as I mentioned around the customer-focused systems engineering centers, we have an intention of opening such a center in Europe, and it's my hope, at least, that many of the engineers that have been working for Digital in the past will find an opportunity to work in that capacity, just as one example. Because fundamentally, you need engineers. This is a technology-driven company. Now, we need engineers, but just like all the other functions in the company, they may not be doing tomorrow what they were doing yesterday, because the market is changing rapidly, and we have to consolidate and eliminate some of these things. But my intention is, with half our business in Europe, for example, that we would have a growing recognition of our engineering presence in Europe. And again, it has to be done as is affordable and so forth and so on. It's a business decision. But the overall direction is yes, and we will be doing that. And as I say, this systems engineering effort that supports our solutions and systems integration business is quite important to our future. And my belief is that during the fiscal year, this fiscal year, that Strecker and Mahendra Patel in particular will establish such a center in Europe. Other questions?
Hi, I'm Jana Cardillo, and I'm on the Stowe Site Valuing Diversity Committee. We need your help in getting management to realize the connection between diversity and business and how it's good for the business and there's added value, and also to free up some of their employees to spend time, work time, on some of the diversity awareness events.
The issue around diversity is an important one to Digital because it's part of our culture, part of our heritage. It's a situation that is necessary from a business point of view, even if it weren't the right thing to do to be focused on it, which it is. If you look at the fact that we do business in 100 different countries, just by that statement alone, you know that our customers and our employees in all of these different territories have a wide diversity of everything. You know, gender, race, a color of skin, height and weight, sexual preference, whatever, all of these labels that we have. Digital is not about that. Digital is about competence, contribution, excellence. I don't want to get all bogged down in all of these labels. And what we're working on then is to make sure that people have that awareness and respect and appreciation for the value that differences bring to our culture. See, not only do we want to be tolerant of each other in terms of all of these labels that society has, we want to learn to value the difference in perspective and the difference in experience that people have. People experience the world differently as a result of some of these labels and as a result of, you know, what defines them. White male, you know, what it is, you know, lately under attack. But in any event, you know, it's fundamentally that we appreciate each other's value, and we have to do that. Now, I'm intent on that. The company has long had a history of being open and out in front around the issue of diversity, as you observe, as a business issue, as well as the right thing to do, because it's, in my view, it's both. We can have a debate about it. I'm quite open to debate about it. And in fact, what I've chosen to do to help me in this role is to create some leadership forums. So we have a people of color leadership forum that meets with me, that we have a dialogue. It's just me and selected individuals from around the world to talk about issues around diversity. So we have a two-way communication. Then we have a similar issue around gender. There's a leadership forum for women, as I'm quite determined that the company have more opportunity for women based on competence and contribution to be promoted, to excel, look at things differently frequently, and it adds value. We need to be aware of that. This is not easy for each of us as individuals to overcome our biases and prejudices, whatever they might be, relative to white males, for example, or people from Texas with funny accents, or whatever. You know, whatever your particular biases are, and I have mine, everybody has some. We want to work on eliminating those things, expunging those things, and valuing the difference that I mentioned diversity brings to our very rich culture. I see this as a competitive advantage for our company and something that's important. In addition to the diversity issue and around the leadership forums, I'm also quite intent on making sure that each senior leadership team person understands the importance and has in his or her goals for the year something related to this subject. Like, what is your plan? What is it you're going to do around this? I'm not about quotas. That's not my style at all. I don't believe in quotas. I'm not interested in that. But I am interested in knowing what is each individual that's leading the company at the senior leadership team planning to do around this subject. And there won't be a jillion goals on these sheets, so this is important. In addition to that, I'm quite pleased that we've been successful in at least beginning a process relative to the Board of Directors. You know that I am not on the nominating committee of the Board of Directors. In fact, I'm not on any of the committees around compensation or any of that stuff. It's part of a wave of governance in the United States. And fundamentally, I recommend some things, and I've recommended to the nominating committee. I'd like to see some more diversity at our board, and I'm quite pleased that the first new board member that we've announced, a person that I'm meeting today for lunch to acquaint her with our company, is Kathleen Feldstein, obviously of a different gender than the other board members, brings some value, some different perspective to the board. And I'm intent on continuing that process, although, again, I'm not running the nominating committee, not even on it. But you'll see more proof points around this subject. I'm taking a lot of time here because it's important to a lot of our employees. Hopefully, it's important to all of our employees. So you'll be seeing some more about this subject, and you'll get more support from management. Yes?
Hi, I'm Bob Schneider from the U.S. I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit as to what your intentions are for the Office of Ethics and how that relates to your corporate goals.
Bob, thanks for asking that question. This, you've probably seen in Digital Today just this week, an announcement, a very clear enunciation of what digital's ethics are all about and our principles. I've said before, in fact, I think in the very first DVN I made since becoming chief executive, talked about values. Values are quite critical to an enterprise. Values are what define the enterprise. It's not the brick and mortar of the mill or some location or whatever. It's the value system of the company, its culture. Just like for an individual, it's their character. So this is quite important. The role of the Office of Ethics and the purpose of going through our values and making sure that all employees understand what they are is to ensure that we are excellent in terms of our behavior on a worldwide basis and that we are consistent about behavior that we consider appropriate if you're an employee of Digital Equipment Corporation. And each of us has the responsibility to internalize those beliefs, make sure we understand what those values are, and to be willing to call our associates and even our superiors if we see behavior that we don't think is consistent with that value system.
Seminar continues on Side B. Please flip the cassette over, rewind to the beginning of Side B. Thank you.